All the innovations that come into the history of life begin very humbly. The supply of blood vessels in the swimming bladder of the mudfish in the lower Paleozoic Torrent River that enabled it to pull through a season of drought would have seemed, at that time, to that bodiless visitant to our planet we've already imagined, a very unimportant side fact in that ancient world of great sharks and plated fishes, sea scorpions and coral reefs and seaweed. But it opened the narrow way by which the land vertebrates arose to predominance. The mudfish would have seemed then a poor refugee from the too crowded and aggressive life of the sea. But once lungs were launched into the world, every line of descent that had lungs went on improving them. So, too, in the Upper Paleozoic, the fact that some of the amphibia were losing their amphibiousness by a retardation of hatching of their eggs would have appeared a mere response to the distressful dangers that threatened the young tadpole. Yet that prepared the conquest of the dry land for the triumphant multitude of the Mesozoic reptiles. It opened a new direction towards a free and vigorous land life along which all the reptilian animals moved, and this viviparous, young-tending training that the ancestral mammalia underwent during that age of inferiority and hardship for them set going in the world a new continuity of perception of which even man today only begins to appreciate the significance. Third, a number of types of mammal already appear in the Eocene. Some are differentiating in one direction and some in another. Some are perfecting themselves as herbivorous quadrupeds, but some leap and climb among the trees, some turn back to the water to swim, but all types are unconsciously exploiting and developing the brain, which is the instrument of this new power of acquisition and educability. In the Eocene rocks are found small early predecessors of the horse, Aeohippus, tiny camels, pigs, early tapirs, early hedgehogs, monkeys and lemurs, opossums and carnivores. Now, all these were more or less ancestral to living forms, and all have brains relatively much smaller than their living representatives. There is, for instance, an early rhinoceros-like beast, Titanotherium, with a brain not one-tenth the size of that of the existing rhinoceros. The latter is by no means a perfect type of the attentive and submissive student. But even so, it's 10 times more observant and teachable than its predecessor. This sort of thing is true of all the orders and families that survive until today. All the Cainozoic mammals were doing this one thing in common, under the urgency of a common necessity. They were all growing brain. It was a parallel advance. In the same order of family today, the brain is usually from 6 to 10 times what it was in the Eocene ancestor. The Eocene period displayed a series of herbivorous brutes of which no representative survives today. Such were the Uinotheres and the Titanotheres. They were ousted by more specialized graminivorous forms as grass spread over the world. In pursuit of such beasts came great swarms of primitive dogs, some as big as bears, and the first cats, one in particular, Smimlodon, a small, fierce-looking creature with big knife-like canines, the first saber-toothed tiger, which was to develop into greater things. American deposits in the Miocene display a great variety of camels, giraffe camels with long necks, gazelle camels, llamas, and true camels. North America, throughout most of the Cainozoic period, appears to have been in open and easy continuation with Asia, and when at last the glaciers of the Great Ice Age and then the Bering Strait came to separate the two great continental regions, the last camels were left in the Old World, and the llamas in the New. In the Eocene, the first ancestors of the elephants appear in northern Africa as snouted creatures. The elephant's trunk dawned on the world in the Miocene. One group of creatures is of peculiar interest in a history that's mainly to be the story of mankind. We find fossils in the Eocene of monkeys and lemurs, but of one particular creature we have as yet not a single bone. It must have been a creature half-ape, half-monkey. It clambered about the trees and ran, and probably ran well, on its hind legs upon the ground. It was small-brained by our present standards, but it had clever hands with which it handled fruits and beat nuts upon the rocks and caught up sticks and stones to smite its fellows. Spite of the lack of material evidence, the facts of biological science almost compel us to believe that such a creature existed, the common ancestor of the anthropoid apes and the two species of men we'll describe in the next chapter. Fourth, through millions of simian generations, the spinning world circled about the sun. Slowly its orbit, which may have been nearly circular during the equable days of the early Eocene, was drawn by the attraction of the circling outer planets into a more elliptical form. Its axis of rotation, which had always heeled over to the plane of its orbit, as the mast of a yacht under sail heels over to the level of the water, heeled over by imperceptible degrees a little more and a little more, and each year its summer point shifted a little further from the perihelion round its path. These were small changes to happen to a one-inch ball circling at a distance of 330 yards from a flaming sun 9 feet across in the course of a few million years. They were changes an immortal astronomer in Neptune, watching the Earth from age to age, would have found almost imperceptible. But from the point of view of the surviving mammalian life of the Miocene, they mattered profoundly. Age by age, the winters grew, on the whole, colder and harder, and a few hours longer relatively to the summers in 1,000 years. Age by age, the summers grew briefer. On an average, the winter snow lay a little later in the spring in each century, and the glaciers in the northern mountains gained an inch this year, receded half an inch next, came on again a few inches, and so on. The record of the rocks tells of the increasing chill. The Pliocene was a temperate time, and many of the warmth-loving plants and animals had gone. Then, rather less deliberately, some feet or some inches every year, the ice came on. An Arctic fauna, musk ox, woolly mammoth, woolly rhinoceros, lemming, ushers in the Pleistocene. Over North America and Europe and Asia alike, the ice advanced. For thousands of years it advanced, and then, for thousands of years, it receded, to advance again. Europe down to the Baltic shores, Britain down to the Thames, North America down to New England, and more centrally as far as Ohio, lay for ages under the glaciers. Enormous volumes of water were withdrawn from the ocean and locked up in those stupendous ice caps so as to cause a worldwide change in the relative levels of land and sea. Vast areas were exposed that are now again sea bottom. The world today is still coming slowly out of the last of 4 great waves of cold. It's not growing warmer steadily. There have been fluctuations. Remains of bog oaks, for example, which grew 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, are found in Scotland at latitudes in which not even a stunted oak would grow at the present time. And it's amidst this crescendo and diminuendo of frost and snow that we first recognized forms that are like the forms of men. The age of mammals culminated in ice and hardship and man.